Hello and welcome to Pharmalex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with Keely So about performance studies for in vitro diagnostic products or IVDs and how these are impacted by the IVDR. Keely is manager, medical devices IVD at Pharmalex. She has extensive knowledge of the regulatory requirements in Australia, Europe, New Zealand, the US, Canada, and Asia, and helps clients with new product licensing and launch, regulatory impact and gap assessments, CE marking of devices and IVDs, ongoing product compliance initiatives, and audit support. Welcome, Keely, and thank you for taking the time to share your experience with IVDs, and in particular, standards and guidelines with regards to analytical and clinical performance.
Thank you for the introduction, Kim.
To start with, can you talk about why performance studies are required for IVDs and what these studies are?
Yes, certainly. So there's two types of performance studies, clinical performance and analytical performance. Both are really important and provide evidence that the device is safe and performs as intended by meeting the general safety and performance requirements of the IVDR. These studies also serve as inputs to the performance evaluation report, which is a critical document for IVDs.
What is the difference between analytical and clinical performance? And is this defined anywhere?
That's a great question. So the definitions of analytical and clinical performance are defined in Article 2 of the IVDR. Analytical performance is defined as the ability of an IVD to correctly detect or measure a particular analyte. When you're evaluating analytical performance, you're really looking at specific characteristics. One example is analytical specificity, which consists of interference and cross-reactivity. Other characteristics may include trueness and precision. There's also analytical sensitivity, such as limit of detection. There are many more, but these are just examples. The IVDR specifies the analytical performance characteristics that manufacturers must evaluate for each IVD. These will, of course, depend on the IVD's intended use, and any that are deemed not applicable must be justified by the manufacturer. Now, in terms of clinical performance, this is the ability of a device to yield results that are correlated to a particular clinical condition or physiological or pathological process or state in accordance with the target population and intended user. These studies are required to establish or confirm aspects of device performance which cannot be determined by analytical performance studies alone or from literature or previous experience. The characteristics that are typically evaluated in clinical performance studies include diagnostic sensitivity and specificity, as well as positive and negative predictive values. These studies may also evaluate the expected clinical values in normal and affected populations. To summarize, both analytical and clinical performance studies are required, but ultimately the specific characteristics that are evaluated depends on the type of device and the intended purpose.
And have these studies always been required, or has the IVDR changed the requirements?
There was always a requirement for a device to be safe and perform as intended. So yes, these types of studies were always needed. However, under the old directive, the requirements were less prescriptive. The directive was worded such that performance characteristics were assessed on a where appropriate basis. But in contrast, the new regulations specifies all characteristics must be assessed unless justified as being not applicable. And on a general note, if you look at the directive, it's approximately 40 pages long. But with the regulation, it's more like 150 pages long. And that's because the number of requirements has really increased. But the most significant issue faced by manufacturers is that under the old directive, around 80 to 85% of the devices were self-certified. Essentially, manufacturers could make their own declaration of conformance and go ahead and supply the products. But with the new regulation, around 90% of products now require notified body review before they can be CE marked and sold. What we're seeing is that there continues to be a shortage of notified bodies available to support IVDR certification. So while getting good data and the studies completed is a definite challenge for transitioning companies, getting someone to review them is where the real bottleneck is.
Now, earlier you mentioned that the type of studies depend on the particular device. Could you perhaps offer an example of the type of analytical studies an IBD might require?
That's correct. Let's take an example of a COVID-19 rapid antigen test, which I'm sure we've all become very familiar with. Starting with analytical performance, limit of detection is one aspect that needs to be evaluated. This essentially means identifying the lowest concentration of COVID-19 virus particles that the device can detect. In other words, how sensitive it is to detecting the virus in your nasal or saliva sample. Another aspect is specificity. Here, you're testing the device to make sure it doesn't give you a false positive result if there happens to be interfering substances. So, for example, if you've been taking certain cold and flu medications, is there a chance of the medication getting detected as a COVID-19 particle and therefore falsely identifying you as COVID-19 positive? Essentially, you need to make sure the test is only detecting what it's supposed to detect. Other types of human coronavirus or unrelated pathogens present in the sample might also interfere with device performance in this way too. So from these analytical characteristics, it's about making sure the device is able to detect COVID particles above a certain level and that it's also able to correctly detect its presence without cross-reactivity.
Could you also offer an example of the type of clinical studies that may be required for a COVID-19 rapid antigen test?
Of course. So now in terms of clinical performance studies, this would involve recruiting patients with and without COVID symptoms. These patients would be asked to perform the rapid antigen test on site and prepare a separate sample for testing, which uses an alternative method such as real-time PCR, which is performed in the lab. The idea is to compare results obtained from the rapid antigen test and real-time PCR test to see whether they correspond. And from these results, determine whether criteria for clinical sensitivity and specificity have been met.
Thank you for that, Keely. Let's look at the analytical and clinical performance studies with IVDR and how compliance is demonstrated.
Certainly. The need for analytical and clinical performance studies stems from the General Safety and Performance Requirements, or GSPR, within Annex 1 of the IVDR. One of the main ways to demonstrate conformity with the GSPRs is through use of harmonized standards or the relevant parts of those standards for your IVD. It's possible to use other methods, but if there are harmonized standards applicable for your device, the expectation is that these would be used as they represent state of the art.
Thank you again. Let's explore harmonized standards in a bit more detail. What are they and what are they used for?
So a harmonized standard is one that's recognized by the official journal and the European Union. If there's a harmonized standard available for your device, then it should be used to show your product is state of the art. Using a harmonized standard will also help facilitate notified body review of your technical documentation because, again, it's recognized. If a manufacturer develops their own method, it may not have been properly validated, and there would need to be a very good justification for why the method is appropriate. This can make it more difficult to prove compliance with certain requirements as opposed to using harmonized standards.
How many harmonized standards are there currently for IVDs?
There's currently 9 IVDR harmonized standards that have been published in the European Journal, but there's also a lot of work happening in this space, so we can expect this list to grow with time.
Apart from harmonized standards, is there anything else manufacturers can use to demonstrate compliance with the IVDR?
Yes, there are. Another way manufacturers can demonstrate compliance is through common specifications. These are a set of technical and clinical requirements, and while they're different from a standard, they can also be used to comply with regulatory requirements for an IVD process or system. Common specifications are issued by the European Commission if there's no existing harmonized standard, or if they deem the existing ones to be insufficient for certain categories of devices. Currently, the only common specifications we have for IVDs are for Class D, and they include things such as performance characteristics, testing methods, and acceptance criteria, similar to what you would see within a standard. If there is a common specification for your device type, you must demonstrate compliance with it, unless you're able to duly justify that an alternative approach is equivalent or better. This is important because if your device was developed in accordance with a common specification, the regulation allows presumption of conformity with the IVDR requirements.
If these studies are performed, can they be used for other global submissions as well as IVDR for EU?
The short answer is yes. The expectation from global regulators is that you demonstrate compliance with their own safety and performance requirements through use of international standards, including studies you conduct using European harmonized standards. These can certainly be leveraged for other global submissions. But, of course, manufacturers should conduct their due diligence and check whether their target country has their own version of a harmonized standard, as it may contain additional requirements that need to be met on top of what you've done already.
Clearly, these studies are being taken more seriously by the regulators. What does that actually mean for patients?
Yes, they are absolutely being taken more seriously by regulators. Some serious issues with devices in the past demonstrated that the directive wasn't sufficient. The need for a more robust regulatory framework became more obvious to ensure that manufacturers are not only making sure their device, whether it be a medical device or an IVD, performs as intended, but is also safe for those who use it or are exposed to it. So the fact that these products now require more robust study evidence and how most also require notified body review and approval, this represents regulators looking out for patients and users by putting their safety first. At the end of the day, we have to remember regulations are not intended to create burden for manufacturers. It's all driven by the need for patient safety.
With that in mind, what kind of risk could there be without such testing?
The simple answer is that we have no assurance that the device is safe and performs as intended. Going back to our COVID theme as an example, during the early stages of the pandemic, we had several variants, Alpha, Beta, Delta, and the rapid antigen tests from IVD manufacturers would have been tested against those variants. But of course, COVID evolved over time, and Omicron became the dominant variant. So regulators needed to ensure manufacturers were staying on top of these changes and continuing to test their devices to make sure they still performed as intended in the COVID context. Patients don't know what strain they've got, so it's up to the manufacturer to ensure their device remains sensitive to detecting the different variants and remains state of the art. If manufacturers did not stay on top of this testing, people infected with newer variants may get false negative results and inadvertently spread their infection to the community, causing a public health risk.
Thank you for joining me today, Keely, and for sharing your knowledge of IVDR and analytical and clinical performance requirements. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.